5, 4. Good evening, and welcome to Bucky Bacaw and Backyard Chickening here at the studios of WGDR and WGDH. I'm Carl Ettenayer, the host of Relocalizing Vermont, every Thursday morning from 8:30 to 10 in the morning. That's where I first got acquainted with Bucky Bacaw. I was looking around for materials having to do with food, energy, and the local economy at the end of the age of oil. And what luck I had to come across on radioforall.net, Bucky Bacaw's weekly backyard chicken broadcast. Bucky with humor, with enthusiasm, with vigor, every week talks about backyard chickening. He does not shy away from talking about the drawbacks, even the dangers of industrial chickening and the eggs that we get from the grocery store, but he really focuses on the joy of backyard chickening. And he ends each show by saying, I had a good time. And I hope that you all have a good time tonight as well. And we are going to begin with an alter ego that Bucky developed about 3 years ago so that he could take his ukulele out and work as a busker on the streets of New York City, his home, and also for private events. And you can find out more about this alter ego at his website, buscarsi.com, spelled as it sounds in Italian. So I'd like you to welcome Roberto Buscarsi, as well as members of the Montpelier Ukulele Players.
Make me happy all the while. In this world where we live, there should be more happiness. So much joy we can give to each brand new bright tomorrow. Make me happy through the year. Never bring me any tears. Let your arms be as warm as the sun from up above. Bring me fun, bring me sunshine, bring me love. Bring me sunshine in your eyes. Bring me rainbows. From the sky, life's too short to be spent having anything but fun. So much we can be so content if we gather little sunbeams lighthearted all day long. Keep me singing happy songs, and that's not hard. Let your arms be as warm as the sun from up above. Bring me fun, bring me sunshine, bring me love. Bring me fun, bring me sunshine, bring me love.
Grazie, grazie. We have one more song about a carbon sequestration, okay? Ready? Everybody ready? Okay. Grab your coat and get your hat. Leave your worries on the doorstep. Just direct your feet to the sunny side of the street. Can't you hear it? Pitter-pat, that's a happy tune in your step. Life can be so sweet on the sunny side of the street. Used to walk in the shade with those blues on parade. But I'm not afraid. This rover crossed over. If I never have a cent, I'll be rich as Rockefeller. Gold
dust at my feet on the sunny side of the street. I used to walk in the shade with those blues on parade. But you know what? I'm not afraid. Wax Rover crossed over. If I never have another cent, I'll be rich as Ben and Jerry. Gold dust at my feet on the sunny side of the street.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. I'm very pleased to be here. I'm Roberto Buscarsi. Carl Ettnayer invited me to join Bucky on this tour of the area and tonight's broadcast to meet other people who love beautiful music and beautiful food and beautiful everything, beauty and joy. And one of the greatest miracles is I met up with the Montpelier ukulele players, all right? Just give them a hand. Uh-huh. And we have Ellen Perry, raise your hand. And a Beverly Peck. Yes, a Beverly Peck, get it? Do you understand? All of these beautiful miracles happen. People just perfectly. And we have Bob and Joan Barrett. And Renee LaGala. Yes, thank you very much. They're all laughing because I always pause at all the women when I say their names. And then we have Tom Wales and Sharon Lavoie, who's been very patient with me. I am a difficult person, and she brings everybody together. And the future of ukulele, Amelia Moore. All right? Thank you very much. Okay, right now we have one more song to sort of get ready to you know, bring in the moment when Bucky Bacaw, my good friend, and Carlette and I are going to talk about Gallus Gallus. This is a very appropriate song, you're going to see. And of course, always, you can sing along. Does anybody need a ukulele? We got one guy playing ukulele. Later on, think about it, and when we do the other song, you can do that for the audience. Because it's always on my mission to bring new people into ukulele. One night when Farmer Brown was taking the air, he locked up the barnyard with the greatest of care. When out in the henhouse, something stirred, he shouted, "Who's there?" This is what he heard. "There ain't nobody here but us, the chickens. There ain't nobody here at all. So calm yourself and stop your fuss. There ain't nobody here but us. We're chickens trying to sleep, and you butt in and hobble, 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 hobble with your chin. There ain't nobody here but us, the chickens. There ain't nobody here at all. They're stomping around, kicking the ground. You're kicking up an awful dust. We're chickens trying to sleep, and you butt in and hobble, 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 hobble. It's a sin. Tomorrow is a busy day. We got things to do. We got eggs to lay. We got ground to dig and bugs to scratch. It takes an awful lot of setting, getting chicks to hatch." And who's here tonight? "There ain't nobody here but us, the chickens. There ain't nobody here at all. So quiet yourself. Stop your fuss. There ain't nobody here but us. And kindly point that gun the other way and hobble, 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 hit the hay." Okay, we're gonna see you later.
Thank you so much, Roberto, and thank you for coming all the way from your home in Italia to be with us and with your friend Bucky Bacaw. I'm Carl Ettnayer. You're listening to a live broadcast from the studios of WGDR and WGDH featuring Bucky Bacaw on Backyard Chickening. Want to welcome all the regular listeners of The Daily Show who tuned in to find something unusual on the airwaves tonight, and all the listeners who tuned in especially to hear Bucky Bacaw. Well, Bucky Bacaw, the first encounter that I had with Bucky Bacaw was finding an interview that he conducted with our friends down at WOOL, radio station Wool in Bellows Falls, Vermont. And that interview began with, as often happens on live radio, a little bit of technical difficulties, and Bucky offered some suggestions, and the interviewer said, "Wow, you're pretty technically skilled for a chicken." And then there's a pregnant pause, and then Bucky said, "Oh, I'm not a chicken." And it was the most precious piece of radio that I'd heard in a long time, a man denying that he was a chicken. And then he went on to riff on that about how you've been listening to my show for all this time, and you thought that I was some sort of anthropomorphic chicken. And that just demonstrates Bucky's humor, his willingness to improvise, to go with the flow, and that's one of the things that I really love about Bucky Bacaw. Bucky Bacaw also has some theme music of his own, which we'll cue up right here. Sounds about like that. So I'd like you to welcome Bucky Bacaw.
Thank you. Thank you very much. It's good to be here. It's great to be here.
Well, Bucky, you know, it's kind of surprising maybe to some of the people in the audience here that you look very much like Roberto Buscarsi. You've taken off your hat, but you're wearing exactly the same clothes as Roberto Buscarsi did. A nice vest, a tie, a very nice black shirt, some slacks. This is not just because we didn't have time for a quick costume change or a place for you to change behind. This is actually the way Bucky looks in real life.
That's right. Bucky Bacaw is an urban agriculturalist. And Bucky and Buscarsi have one thing in common. They reach out to all kinds of folk, but they can have it all. They live in the city, and I dress like Frank Sinatra sometimes when I can, which is pretty much every day. But a lot of folks are surprised. If you look around, you'll see pictures of me digging trenches and dealing with chickens and even hugging goats, all in my Frank Sinatra-esque Bucky Bacaw costume. It's all part of how I'm trying to teach people that anybody can chicken. And it's not, you know, some fantasy of getting in the overalls, although I love people in overalls a lot. You know, my grandfather was always in overalls.
Well, you and your partner, Jules, arrived in Vermont for this visit on Wednesday, and I want to thank Jules for all her work in facilitating the whole visit and tonight's show. So thank you, Jules. Jules Corkery. And you've been traveling around and visiting various coops, amongst other things. You were down at the farmer's market today. How has your visit to Vermont been?
It's been really amazing. People have been really beautiful and welcoming, and it's really wonderful for me to see, as somebody who, you know, you get kind of trapped in New York, and I go around New York, and it's a competitive place, and yet everybody wants to talk about getting off that hamster wheel of the consume dispose kind of lifestyle, and that's always been my thing. You know, I don't want to throw a lot of things away, and everywhere I go, people are saying that same thing. You know, on the way up here, we went to Portland, Maine, and they're all excited about their compost pickup. And you know, New York City is like a lot of little micro neighborhoods, and people never leave their little Upper East Side. You know, it's like a 7-block radius, you know, and that's where they live. And so you go across to Staten Island or Queens, and, you know, that's what I do. I take chickens around to different neighborhoods in New York and get what people's different concerns are. And it's great to come up the country and see, okay, you know, they have kids campouts up here, and folks are really interested in changing their life in whatever environment they're in. And I've met some really beautiful people. We're going to have a lot of really great shows. I'm just going to name some of the folks that I met so far. Barbara Bruno, had a great interview with her. Steve Miracle. Rob Ryan is somebody who I've been friends with for a while through Facebook, and we finally met. It was wonderful. We play a little music together. Cynthia Johnson and Steve Miller are also folks who had been talking to for a long time, and they fed me great food and showed me around. Wilmer Brandt, everybody knows, is like a national treasure, and so we had the honor of meeting him. Brian Holm, I'm going to see tomorrow on my way out because I couldn't leave him out. And there's a whole bunch of people who I didn't get to see this trip, but we'll see in the future. Allison Caldwell and Les Birnbaum were really good to me last night, and they fed me and had me around the campfire singing songs. And David Holly showed me his amazing ukulele, which we'll talk about a little bit later, about how, you know, all you can always make everything sustainable and democratized and available to everyone, and he's working on that. So all of those folks, I'd like to thank them, and we'll talk about some of the other stuff we're doing.
David Halle's ukulele is something to see and to hear about.
So. Yeah, they're not ready yet, but we're trying to get a buzz so we can get them moving faster.
Right. That's right, a local luthier who's doing amazing things. Well, you've been traveling around quite a bit, not just in this one trip to Vermont and Maine, but you've been meeting chickeners both in the New York City area. Bucky Bacaw first got his start and your start on Radio Boise, and you met chickeners out there. Tell us, what are some of the differences you've seen between the rural chickeners out here and sort of the mid-rural chickeners like Barbara downtown Montpelier? I mean, is downtown Montpelier really urban? I'm not sure. And in New York City?
You know, the difference is really in the details of the formula. So everybody wants empowerment and discovery. And ethics and aesthetics is one of the things I always say. You got a chicken for the ethics and the aesthetics, self-sufficiency and fun. But, you know, people in more rural areas have a stronger chance of taking a homesteading approach. So even folks who are kind of sentimental about their chickens, you'll hear them talking about outcomes, you know, and they're kind of really measuring those outcomes. And a lot of folks in New York City have this fantasy, like, I'm going to homestead in my 350-square-foot backyard. And it's amazing how much food you can grow and even have chickens in that same thing, and they can help you. But what happens in the city is, you find out, well, I can't really live on 3 eggs and 5 more tomatoes than I had last season, even though it's a beautiful thing. But what they notice, folks in New York City, is the mental health benefit. So everybody I know in New York City is like, I just come back out there, and I dig a little hole, and all the worms come, and I see that they're just, like, chilled out, and they don't care. You know, they're just doing their job, and they're not underfoot like other pets I have, always annoying me. They like to see me, but they have their own thing, and that relaxes me. So, you know, that's kind of – those are the kind of extremes. But everybody talks about all the same things, because I hear, you know, rural folks say the same thing. Oh, the chickens are so beautiful. Better than TV, you know.
And why don't you tell us about how chickening has changed in your own life? Because that's one of the things I admire about you, is your adaptability as you move from Boise back to your home in New York City. Your flock changed accordingly.
Well, it's a personal vision, because I never wanted to not have chickens in my life again. And it was also kind of an experiment to see what could be done. And I know I knew in New York that a lot of folks in community gardens had chickens. And so I was kind of, at first, when I couldn't find a yard right away, which is possible, but a little difficult in New York, I thought, well, I'll just share chicken in with other folks. And I did some of that, and that was good. But I'd be asked to do chicken talks, and I would just do them cold, you know. And I it's great that people listen to the radio and like it. But if I say to people, you should have chickens in your little backyard in Queens. You have that yard. It's going to waste. Why don't you have chickens back there? And I tell them all the reasons, and they still, you know, they have whatever picture they have in their head of battery chickens or of chickens going wild, you know, running around and making noise or being dirty or something like that. And so if I take chickens and show them a chicken, then all of a sudden it makes sense to them. And I know about this miniature breed called Sarama, which are about 6 inches high and weigh less than a pound, and they're very tame and they're very mobile. So I just take them around to little urban gardens and to people's backyards. A lot of times I offer to sing a couple songs with Roberto Buscarsi and, you know, kind of get them in the mix, get in their backyard. And I put these chickens down and I say, look what they're doing. They're fertilizing your garden. And then I say, look what they're doing. They're eating that pigweed or that little piece of grass that you didn't want anyway. You wanted vegetables, and they don't smell. They're not making a whole bunch of noise. And all of a sudden they're like, oh, I could have chickens, you know. And so that's like, it's really, really effective. And you know, so I'm kind of moving around that. And then this summer I kind of so I have them indoors in a 1-bedroom apartment, and they're the cleanest, quietest pet I've ever had, indoor pet I've ever had. But they have been kind of getting underfoot, and so this summer I had an opportunity to send them to summer camp. And there's a special composting project down on a demilitarized island called Governor's Island, and used to be an army base. And now I go out there. They live with 26 other chickens of all different sizes. And we come almost once a week and visit them, make sure they're doing all right. And then we take them out to different sites on the island where they can be really cute. And I say to people, there's 26 more chickens who are also cute. You should go there. And then we're going to tell you how to not throw away so much stuff. And it's a beautiful experience. And then when we move back to New York, I think we're going to get a yard finally, just a little tiny yard, because that's the way I like it best. But it's worked nice with those chickens.
I saw and heard some amazement in the audience here when you talked about keeping three chickens, even tiny saramas, in your little apartment. How shall I put this delicately? cats have kitty litter, and dogs you take out for a walk. How do you handle the associated body functions for chickens?
Well, I try not to feed them too much watermelon or blueberry. And that's, okay? But other than that, it's all kitchen scraps and forage from when we take them around and grass, and they make nice little pellets. And, it's funny, Jules is convinced that the reason they never jump up on our bed is because they know it's our nest. And they have never jumped on the bed or pooped on the bed or anything like that. And so they have a little area that they like, and it's actually a hardwood floor, and we pick the poop up. Now, I did another experiment where we hatched a couple quail under one of the sarama. I usually keep that a secret, but I'm letting you folks know about it because it was a weird thing and it was an experiment. And I got to tell you, it didn't totally work out, but it was interesting. Quail are nice. I'll have them again someday. But I was worried about them living because they look so delicate, even more delicate than regular chicks. So I fed them antibiotic feed, something I swore I'd never do with any chicken, But I know people do it. Carl did it. He convinced me maybe you should think about it. And it smelled in that house. It really smelled bad. And so then after 2 weeks, we pulled the antibiotic food and everything was cool again in terms of smell. And, so we just pick everything up. We collect it in a bucket and then we take it out to do our gardening. And it works pretty good. I actually made a video that's on YouTube, but it's a little hard to find. But I think maybe I'll release it where I'm kind of sarcastic because most of my media pieces, people come and they say, and there was no smell and it was a beautiful thing. But this one person said, they poop everywhere. And so I was like, yeah, but... I talked to her. She had a dog, and I was like, they poop everywhere, but you didn't smell it. So, I don't know.
Well, we talked back and forth, Bucky, during the time that we've known each other, and I've also learned from you the most recent crop of chicks that I got, I raised without antibiotic feed. I had one that died out of the 36, one that died within hours, which you can't blame on its feed, and another that died right towards the end, which you can't blame on it being a chick and not getting antibiotics in its feed. So worked out perfectly well. That the mortality is about the same as when I did use antibiotics.
So that was a really important discovery.
Yeah.
But, I don't blame people for being nervous at first and trying different things out.
Well, one of the things that you and I have talked about is that backyard chickeners, they make communities with each other, and they use technology to do so. Tell us about how
you've seen.
Right.
Well, a lot of us are worried about the future. At the same time that we're trying to have fun, clearly we have a resource issue looming ahead. Whatever that means, whatever the formula is, whatever the time frame. And at the same time, a lot of us are thinking, we want more quality life and we want to be more self-sufficient. And so we're moving towards that. And towards localism, it's a magic word. But we live in a unique and interesting environment, so we might as well make use of that. And so the internet has made so much possible. So I'm all about localism, but I'm sharing with people from all over the place. I mean, I used to be on Deconstructing Dinner, which was a Canadian show. I would meet Canadians who love Bucky Bacaw. That was so flattering. I meet people from Florida. And so we can really reach across all these places. And one of the things, if you've been paying attention to the show, regularly, you might have heard, but I'm gonna, and it's up on my website, buckybacaw.org, and there's gonna be a new one coming up. I've been on Russian television twice, and it's beautiful because you can kind of hear my voice a little bit, and then you can hear the voice over in Russian translating what I'm saying. and I know a very little bit of Russian, but when you put things into Google Translate, you get the craziest, weird kind of translations from it. But I work with a bunch of Russian people, and they told me that they were very positive pieces.
Yeah, one of the earliest computer translation programs was given the task of translating something from English to Russian and Russian to English back again. And they put in out of sight, out of mind. And when it came back to English, it was invisible maniac.
Right.
Hopefully the technology has improved since then. Well, one of the technologies that we're really proud of around here is the Vermont invented Front Porch Forum. How many people here are on Front Porch Forum? Yay! Number of people. You can go to frontporchforum.com, and if your town or if your neighborhood has signed up for it, East Montpelier has, Callis has, Worcester has, and other places in the area, then you can communicate via these email listservs that go out only to people in your neighborhood and only to people who have signed up with their real names. They're also filtered by the Front Porch Forum staff to make sure that the level of invective stays relatively low. It's a civil forum. And it was fascinating. We started back in December. It was fascinating in East Montpelier this year in the spring to watch the posts about bears and chickens. There was a sow and three cubs that kept getting into people's chicken coops pretty successfully. And I didn't do this myself, but people who followed it carefully and either had a map or had a better map of East Montpelier in their head than I did, they said you could put pins in the map as these posts came out and watch the progress of these four bears across the town.
Well, and I was wondering about that because when I was going around this area here, and you know, of course, I look it up on the map and I see it's 3 miles away, and then I'm going up and down the road and stuff. And once again, I'm using technology. I got my little GPS, which I used to think was cheating and an awful thing to do, but it made this trip a lot more convenient. But I would talk to people who live pretty close to each other. One person says, oh, I have a terrible problem with fox. And I'd ask the next person, you know, what about the predator situation? They have chickens all over the place. And they say, I've never seen a fox. And I was trying to figure out, you know, why we have these microenvironments. I mean, you talk about the spectrum between globalism and localism, and that is the whole thing. You can be so connected to somebody in Russia at the same time that you can have a different situation than somebody right down the street, you know. And I think it's all about making connections to each other. But you know, it's interesting. I wondered if there were wildlife corridors, and that's a way that people figured that out. I mean, I think there's other factors in play. You know, some folks, they have their coops really close to their house. Some coops are more predator-proof than others. You know, there's so many factors. And what that means is that nobody's really – everybody is a chicken expert in their own backyard, but nobody knows it all. And that's one of the things that I always repeat to people when I go around, because I know that I'm really good at looking up information, and I've built up a great list of resources, and I have all these archives, and I have my way to answer folks' questions, but I'm stumped all the time.
Well, if you're just tuning in, this is WGDR, WGDH. This is a special live broadcast from our studio featuring Bucky Bacaw. I'm Carl Ettenier. I host Relocalizing Vermont on Thursday mornings from 8:30 to 10. And every show, almost every show, around 8:40 or so, I play Bucky Bacaw's Backyard Chicken broadcast. Bucky has been going around and interviewing people in the area on his trip up here from Queens. And coming up in the next several months, he promised us that we will hear some of those interviews as he does various coop profiles. We're going to go until about 9 o'clock here, and before the end, we'll welcome back Roberto Buscarsi, the ukulele player with members of the Montpelier Ukulele Players. And we'll also take questions from the audience here. If anybody has a question that they'd like to ask Bucky, please write it down. If you don't have a piece of paper, let Jules know, and she can collect the questions now and hand out more pieces of paper. I'd like to ask you your whole shtick here about backyard chickening, your visits to people, your radio broadcasts. It's about getting people to have chickens in their lives and making it as obvious a part of their life as having dogs and cats, but you know, obviously more focused on the food chain. And can you tell us, Bucky Bacaw, how do you go about speaking to people in a way that they can hear you and that actually gets people to change to backyard chickening?
Well, you know, I guess I'm a lifelong entertainer. I didn't even realize that until fairly recently. But you know, I always like to share with people and talk with people and try to get certain ideas across. So I thought I was pretty persuasive. And I had the experience where one day someone would say, oh, you know, I listened to your radio show and you convinced me to get chickens. It's all because of you, because that's really flattering. But then other people who would say they're really green and they do this and that. They have the full profile. And every time I just said, well, you know what, have you thought about getting chickens? You know, they complain about their garden or something like that. And I said, well, you know, I know you have a yard, you can get chickens. And they just start kind of walking away from me like, oh my God, I don't want to hear about chickens. And I really kind of took it personally at first. And then I started to think back about when I was doing some grassroots politics and the stuff I'd heard about marketing, and I realized that folks, some folks can hear things and some folks can see things, but everybody needs to hear it from more than one source. So even if secretly I'm the one who sent the press release and I'm the reason that they read it in USA Today, as well as hearing it on your show, as well as, and maybe even I'm the guy who convinced their neighbor, but they don't know all that, you know. But a lot of times, you know, the more chickening that's going on, the more folks start to realize how easy it is. Or, you know, like, people walking by Barbara Bruno's house all the time in downtown Montpelier, and they're saying, oh, she has chickens and they're all pretty and I haven't seen a disaster yet, you know. And so, and then they hear the Bucky McCall's Backyard Chicken broadcast while they're driving to work, and they say, well, you know, okay, that this lady has chickens, and then Roberto, and then I saw it, you know. That's how it all gets together. It's like multiple. So that's all of our job, is to kind of, you know, one of my difficulties is I always say you have to make it look sane and easy, and having chickens in my apartment was a great way to get attention, but it's always been a trick to make sure that no one turns it into a freak show. You know, I've had reality show offers, and, you know, but I've been pretty good at saying to be, you know, I take them in and I show them and I say, this is about sustainability, and I take these chickens out and we use everything. There's no waste, and it works for me. It might not work for everybody, and I'm just trying to give people the tools to make stuff work. And you know, I'm surprised people usually hear that. You know, journalists do.
Well, I was at a lunch today that included, amongst other people, Chris Granda. He lives in Richmond. He's a chair of the select board there. And he's also, I think he's a U.S. director of a Canadian organization called One Change, which works with civic organizations on the energy front to get people to make small changes in their lives on energy. And what he pointed out was the social science research shows, and also his practical experience shows, you can't very easily get people to change their actions by changing their attitudes. What really works is getting people to change what they do, and then their attitudinal shifts will follow after that. Have you noticed anything like that with backyard chickening?
Well, people start chickening for all kinds of reasons, and then they discover the other reasons. So I was a vegan at the time that I first got chickens, and I was talked into it by a partner, and you know, I was the resistant one. But I was convinced, okay, we can get rid of this bug problem with little baby chicks, and then maybe we'll get rid of them, or probably they'll get killed and there'll be heartache in the house, but then we could just move on, you know. And we brought the chickens in, and they got rid of all the bugs. And then I got turned on because I was always not a very good gardener, and my compost was turning in half the time. And I started growing more vegetables, and it was more fun to be in the garden because they were so cute and fun, and my gardening improved. So it was a surprise. And I know folks who do it for the eggs, or, you know, folks do it for one reason or another, or because their kids beg them, and you never know which partner is going to take to it. I mean, I ended up being the chicken expert, you know.
Well, I got into backyard layers because of you, Bucky Bacaw. I had raised backyard meat birds a number of times, and then I started playing your show week after week, week after week, and I thought, you know, sure would be good if I'm doing this, if I actually had some experience with backyard layers myself. So that's what led me to do it, and I had half dozen ended up with my first time around. I got a dozen now. You visited Carl Hammer at Vermont Compost, where he raises layers on food scraps, and he's thought very holistically about the role of eggs in the food system. He's calculated, well, not only that there's enough food scraps in the U.S. to feed all the chickens that produce all the eggs that we need, but also, it only takes 30 million families who have half a dozen hens apiece to completely replace the commercial egg industry.
Right, right.
So with my dozen birds, I'm doing twice my share of that 30 million families.
Right, right. Well, I don't buy any feed really for my chickens, except for sometimes treats because Jules likes to spoil them a little bit, but. But we could do it without, you know, the experiment I'm always watching, and I don't have to buy him any feed, and we've gone months without it.
Amazing.
You know, and Carl Hammer, I forgot to mention him before. I don't know. I got these crazy notes here in front of me. And he was really great because he had an emergency day. And you know, I think everybody here probably knows his style. He brought me in. And at first I was like, you want me to just go away? And he told me so many things that I'm going to have a 10-minute show out of my conversation with him, but he's going to have an influence on me, you know, that's really going to outlive just one or two shows. Mm. That was really fun.
Mm. Well, let's get ready to take questions from the audience.
Okay, let me tell folks, as Jules does that, you know, if I can answer the question, or even if I can, it may become an episode in the future. You know, like we said, you know, I consider myself a chicken evangelist more than a chicken entertainer, more than a chicken expert. But we'll take a shot at it. And the other thing is, if we don't get to your question today, or if you think of one later, you can always send me an MP3 or some other digital audio piece, and I can put it together into a show. Brian Holm and I did that, and Steve Miller and I did that too, and Carl and I have done it before. So, and the new thing is, you can even call me up on the phone, and I never answer my phone. So if you leave me a voicemail, I got a little app so that I can turn the voicemail into things. So just call me and just keep on talking, and I'll edit it later. Or you can send me an email, but if you send me an email, I'm going to read your email in a funny voice. And so you have no idea what's going to happen. I'm not really good at Vermont accents, so you don't know what you're going to sound like, or I'll get Jules to do it in a funny voice. So send me digital.
And if you don't have the digital technology yourself, but with cell phones, most people do, even if they don't know it these days. But if you don't have it yourself or don't want to figure out your cell phone, call me, Carl Ettinger, here at WGDR, and we can arrange, as Brian Holm did, to just walk into the production studio. We'll put something together for you. And that goes for all you people listening out in Radio Land as well. Your website is buckybacaw.org.
Correct.
People can find your email and your telephone number there now. We have Ashton in Victory, Vermont, to ask a question that you've partially answered already, but maybe you can say a little bit more about it. Why did you have chickens in an apartment?
Because I didn't want to live without chickens, and because I heard it was possible, and I wanted to see if it was true. Now, I got to tell you something. I love the folks who brought Sarama to this country. They're really cool. And if you've never been to a Sarama show, and especially if you're near Louisiana, you got to see it, because instead of just taking the birds out of cages, they throw the roosters down gently but firmly onto this little astroturf, and then they strut around and they act all fancy and look really beautiful, and then they lose points if they peck somebody or do something. And it's so cute because it's the most interactive show ever. You know, it's really an exciting chicken show. But they're trying to sell chickens to people, so they say they're the most popular house pet in Malaysia. So I heard that, and I tried that. And since then, I've met a few people in Malaysia, and they're like, yeah, I heard of a guy once who had a chicken as a house pet. But I heard it was possible, so I wanted to see if it was possible. And it is. You know, I really actually don't recommend it, but the chickens can be happy, and you can be happy. And then they can be, for me, they can be entertainment chickens, and you can sort of, when you're taking them out on a walk, you meet all kinds of people who say, where do those chickens come from? And you can tell them how great chickens are. And you can say, if I can keep them in an apartment, you can keep them in your pretty little backyard over there that I can't rent.
This is a follow-up question. Stephen from the country wonders, if you're raising chickens in the city, how do the foxes reach the buttons on the elevator? This is somebody who wants to even the tables there.
Yeah.
Here's a question that comes up from time to time. How long can a recently laid egg be kept unrefrigerated and still be good to eat?
Well, I've discovered eggs in the summer that have been sitting there for 3 weeks and have been pretty good. But, you know, that's personal experience. I always recommend breaking an egg into a bowl. In fact, once I met a fellow who was doing this incredible, he has the most delicious chicken I've ever eaten, and their super kosher chicken is the deal. And he's selling in Jewish communities. And I went and I did a profile with him, and he told me, well, we always break it into a bowl. And I thought, well, I did not think of that, you know, because I, you know, there's always that fear that something bad's going to happen when you're like baking. You're going to have to throw everything out. So
I've never tried it, but I understand that some people will coat eggs with, I believe it's some sort of oil, and just keep them unrefrigerated in the root cellar for months at a time. Have you ever done that or talked to people who've done that?
I have talked to people who've done that. I mean, you know how old they are when you get them from the grocery store.
Right.
You know, I've heard like 4 to 6 weeks. And, right, you know, supposedly they're all in special refrigeration and stuff. But if you live in a place like New York, like I do, where you're constantly walking by the grocery store, you see what happens in the truck, you know.
Hmm.
Right.
Well, here's Cynthia from Calais, who's asked a question about psychology of chickens. Every time I introduce young chickens to the flock, the older hens tend to lay more eggs, not to be outdone by the youngsters. Is this just my imagination, or is it chicken psychology 101?
Well, I never tell anybody that anything's in their imagination. Even the people who tell me that their rooster that fertilized a hen's egg turned into a hen, or vice versa. If you've ever heard my transgender show, people tell me the craziest things. Or they'll say, you know, people will swear to me that if you ever get an egg, if you ever find an egg in your flock that doesn't have a yolk in it, a rooster laid that egg. So I don't know, you know, what, you know, like I said, everybody has a different microenvironment, and everybody's a backyard chicken expert in their own backyard. But that sounds reasonable to me. I've never seen chickens get, like, competitive, but I don't know, bring a little bit into the mix, you know.
Hmm. Now, sometimes when you introduce chickens to a flock, then the old chickens, the established ones, they try to drive off the new ones.
You'd think they'd be too busy being hostile to, you know, have that save up the energy to lay more eggs. But that might be a strategy that we want to, you know, maybe convince chickens to do, or breed chickens that have that strategy. That's a much cleverer strategy than being hostile, right? Mm. Reproductively. Those are the more survivable chickens. I've been talking to different people about their introduction of flocks theory, and you know, there's a lot about that. I've talked about that on other shows if you look at my archives, and everybody has a different trick, but you know, you got to let them see each other but not peck each other for a while, and then maybe trick them with a nighttime introduction.
And I believe you said throw out, so they wake up to some of their favorite scraps.
Yeah, right.
Like whole wheat spaghetti. Looks like worms. Here's Jose saying, how can I get my birds to play a better ukulele?
Well, you can improve your birds singing. I know, because we have the episode where I sing to the roosters and they sing in fifths. So usually it's D and A, but I've experimented a little bit and got them to do C, which is easier to play in ukulele. So you can get them to be better ukulele accompanists.
See, I'm I'm going to go back to that one and see if I can read the handwriting. Do you find that keeping chickens in the house is dusty?
Well, it is a little bit dusty, and there's like a little household debate that I'll out ourselves for having. It's a friendly debate, but chickens, you know, we know that chickens need to take baths, and usually they have a dust bath out in your backyard and a piece of dust. And so the one thing that we realized our chickens were missing when winter came about, and these chickens, now they're coddled, they're not adjusted to the winter. So in January, I can't just take them out the way I normally do most of the year. So they get a little bit pent up. So we filled a litter box we've tried different materials. And, oh gosh, I'm really bad with this word. I always say vermiculite. Is it?
That's how I say it.
Is that okay? Sometimes I come up with some other crazy thing. I say, oh, diatomaceous earth. Thank you. See, that's Jules. Usually we work very closely. People who did the coop profile see how she's right next to the mic and say, you forgot to say that, you know, and then I edit it out later. So, but yeah, the diatomaceous earth was bad. It was really bad. So, but we can use heated up sand and they just have their little litter box and it doesn't go too bad. The good thing about diatomaceous earth is, you know, everybody knows that that's going to kill more bugs, but I don't really see why we need to have that in the house.
This one is from
Jules.
Philo Ray from St. Jay. I don't think everybody's using their real name here, Bucky, but maybe you don't.
Well,
either.
You know, it catches on. We can talk about that later, the advantages.
Philo Ray says, I would absolutely like to know how one might try to make eggs bluer than blue. Can I feed them ground up copper pipes or copper sulfate solution?
Well, you know, I heard that the color of the ears is connected to the color of the eggs, and I had never heard that before. Someone told me just recently, and I started looking, and I've seen it to be really, really true. So maybe if you dye their ears, yeah. What do you,
or maybe
that wouldn't work.
Or maybe if you raise robins instead of chickens.
Yeah, that. Or if you get some little robins in there, they might get competitive,
right.
Like those hens.
Right. Well, Barbara in Montpelier is finding that her hens are molting right now. Is there anything special, she asks, I should feed my hens when they molt?
Well, they're going to need more calcium, and they're going to need more nutrition. You know, so I mean, I would make sure I'd give them more kale right away, and I might, you know, supplement if you have to. You know, if you don't have enough ground up eggshells, kale is, you know, everybody eat more kale, goes for your chickens too. Kale is the best chicken food, and then you can even kind of take the parts that you don't really like so much, and if you chop them up fine, or depending on the chicken, you know, or give them their own little patch of kale.
Well, isn't there proteins in the feathers? You know, wouldn't extra protein help them at time
of
molting?
Yeah.
Okay. If you're just tuning in, this is a Q&A period with Bucky Bacaw. He is live here in the studios of WGDR, WGDH. We've gotten lots of questions from the audience. This one I'm going to ask the women in the audience to answer. This is from a longtime listener and admirer in Callis. Are you as hot in real life as your voice makes you sound? Women, what do you say? Okay, well, all you people out in Radio Land, you know what you're missing. here's
Bruce Garcy thought that he was the hot one. You know,
here's Steve M. in Callis asking, "How do I decide how many chickens or hens to keep?"
Well, you know, you can start out with a good. It depends on your goals, and of course, as we said, you don't. Sometimes what you think your goals are going to be change after you get into it. But I always thought it should be you take how many people you have, and then you add one more chicken, and that's going to get you the right amount of eggs. But I really, really like eggs. And then when you look at the space you have and the size of the chickens, you know, then I hear formulas all the time. I think it's like 4 square feet per chicken. I think that's actually kind of a lot, but that's very nice. And the other thing is the chickens will tell you. Now, you might want to go into it knowing that you're going to eat somebody, or you could go into it knowing that you could rehome somebody, and you can kind of go a little bit high, and then if the chickens start pecking each other and it gets a little bit out of hand, then you sort of slowly reduce your numbers.
Context is really important.
Context.
It reminds me of when my dad lived in Germany and was struggling to speak German, and in the parking garages in some cities in Germany have women-only spots right near the entrance and exit so that they have less, you know, dark, untended space to walk through. And my dad and mom parked in one of those spots one time and came walking out, and there's a German couple coming towards them, and my dad got kind of nervous because he was a man, but he was with this woman. And so he asked them, is German, ist eine Frau genug, which means, is one woman enough? And they looked at him kind of funny, but then they understood the context. Well, Barbara Bruno from Montpelier asks, if the end of the world as we know it happens, what should I feed my chickens if no commercial feed is available?
Well, you can give them a little share of your vegetables. For instance, I don't know, you know, I always like to make a good stock with some of those little stems from the kale and all that, but chickens will eat that, and chickens love grass. Some people say grass is the only chicken food, which is a grain, so grass is a great one, and you know, there are going to be plenty of cockroaches living is what everybody says, if the end of the world is, you know it. So then you can reduce your cockroach problem, and you know what? The cockroaches will probably be eating clean stuff, and cockroaches are actually pretty clean animals. So if you can sort of direct them to the cockroach nests, I think you can safely eat those eggs. I know it sounds gross, but...
How do you make sure that they get enough protein? Eggs have a lot of protein in them.
Yeah, well, cockroaches. Yeah. I mean, all these cockroaches that survive after the end of the world as we know it.
What do you do in your apartment with your chickens?
We don't have cockroaches, but it's funny because we were looking for apartments and there was one with a whole bunch of cockroaches. And
you wanted
the
that
Philippine
one.
Guy was totally cool with it. He had a little backyard and we could have the chickens indoors sometimes, and it was really great. But he actually said to us, he was a beautiful guy because he was so honest. He was like, I have a terrible cockroach problem, terrible, terrible cockroach problem. And I looked at Jules' face and I knew that we weren't going to get that apartment. You know, and then afterwards we were like, I was like, well, you know, we could let the chickens eat the cockroaches, right? You know, and she said no, and she was right though, because there's a lot of kinds of poisons in the other apartments, you
right
know?
Right, that's a good point. Well, here's a final question from the audience, from a Vermonter. You've been talking about the small Sarama chickens that you have, the miniature chickens, and the Vermonter is wondering, would they do well in Vermont?
They're a little bit more, in some ways, they're more vulnerable to predators. So I've seen chickens gang up on a big cat, like on a Maine Coon, or on a, you know, or against a dog, and be pretty successful, some of the bigger, more aggressive wow. chickens. And these guys, you know, they don't move very fast because they're so tame. They come out of the egg, hatch out of the egg, tame. And then if you play with them a lot, then they're like, oh, the world's a beautiful place. And they kind of live that way. You don't necessarily want that in your chickens. They do have an advantage that they can fly really high, like a lot of small chickens, so they can roost. So maybe if they get nervous. And they say that they're tropical and they're not as good in the cold. But I know a guy who has them in Philadelphia, gets pretty cold, and they're just fine. You know, chickens really, birds really, it's just heat's a problem for birds because they don't have a cooling system. So I think Saran would do great here.
One thing that I've come to understand, Bucky Bacaw, in the last half year or so is that a lot of listeners to Relocalizing Vermont, 8:30 to 10 on Thursday mornings, just to get that plug out there one more time, that they think that Carl Ettnayer is really Bucky Bacaw. And it may be because at the end of Bucky Bacaw, when he says, I had a good time, and there's a theme music going out, then I say, well, I had a good time too, Bucky, thank you. And these gravelly voices kind of sound alike. But would you be willing to drop the mask for a moment, step back and reveal who created Bucky Bacaw,
sure.
Why you did it?
So my super ego name is Robert McMinn. And hi. And actually, I have a lot in common. Thank you. And I'm really a lot like Roberto Buscarsi and a lot like Bucky Bacaw. Originally, I created very separate backstories, but then I kind of found myself, like a lot of people with split personalities, kind of integrating all those personalities together. But it started with my first radio show in Boise Community Radio, and there was only four of us, and I always wanted to do something like this anyway, so we started creating all these characters. And Bucky was really popular. And then what I saw as well is that it's a really creating characters is a really great way to reach people about things that you care about, because Carl's amazing. Actually, it's really nice to listen to a show and I don't feel like the world's gonna end, you know. But you know, a lot of people talk about stuff like Peak Oil and you kind of don't want to listen to them anymore, you know, and they're really good people and they're saying things that you should be listening to. And so, you know, I found that if you create a character, it kind of like it lightens it up a little bit. And then the final piece, and this is why I recommend it to everybody, I'm glad people gave me these fake name questions, is that, you know, it creates kind of a person that you kind of want to be. And that's like, and that is really actually the real you. So when you create a character and you're trying to be that, you know, Roberto Buscarsi is all about love. And, you know, when I start to, I'm in New York, I can't help it. Sometimes I'm like, you know, I'm not even going to say the words I say. And then I'm like, you know what? Roberto Buscarsi would just sing them a song. And that works. That's the thing. So I'm trying to become my characters and I kind of keep them ready for that.
Well, I have an announcement to make that next week, Relocalizing Vermont will be guest hosted by Carlo Ettnayer. Well, as I said, at the end of each show, Bucky Bacaw says, I had a good time. And I'd like you all to join me in saying, I had a good time. Bucky, thanks so much.
Thank you.
We're going to close out this live broadcast from the studios of WGDR and WGDH here on The Daily Show with Bucky Bacaw changing into his alter ego, Roberto Buscarsi, to sing you a song. And it's not because he's angry at you. And the members of the Montpelier Ukulele Players are coming up to the stage here to accompany him in the background. Roberto, back to you.
Okay, this one, I'm not going to try to do the English accent anymore. I'm going to be the full-on. You know, I went to a lot of... I'm very good with phonetics. You know, I sing songs in Mandarin, and I sing songs in Japanese and Serbo-Croatian. I tried to get all over that region. And because when I busk in New York, it's a great way to reach people, even if my accent is very thick. But for this song, I was like, this is a beautiful song, and somebody once did it in an accent, so I am just going to do it in my real voice. So. This is a seasonal epic. I was a-working in the lab when later one night to my eyes appeared an eerie sight. For my monster from his slab began to rise, and suddenly, to my surprise, said,
he did the mash.
He did the monster mash.
The monster mash.
It was a graveyard smash.
He did the mash.
It caught on in a flash.
He did the mash.
He did the monster mash from my laboratory in the castle east to the master bedroom where the vampires feast. The ghouls all came from their humble abode to get a jolt from my electrode.
They did the mash.
They did the monster mash.
The monster mash.
It was graveyard smash.
He did the mash.
It was all in a flash.
He did the mash.
They did the monster mash. Now the zombies, they was having a fun. The party, she had just begun. The guests included a wolfman, Dracula, and his son. You know, the scene was a rockin', always digging the sounds. Igor on chains, backed by the baying hounds. The coffin bangers were about to arrive with their vocal group, the Crypt Kicker Five. They played the mash, they did the monster mash.
The monster mash.
It was graveyard smash.
He did the mash.
It caught on in a flash.
He did the mash.
He did the monster mash. Out from his coffin, Drag's voice did ring. Thanks, Steve. Seems he was troubled by just the one thing. He opened the lid and he shook his fist and he said,
"Whatever happened to my Transylvania twist?"
It's now the monster mash.
The monster mash.
A big old graveyard smash.
The mash.
It was all in a flash.
The mash.
He did the monster mash. Okay, now everything's cool, and Drac is part of the band. And my monster mash hit is a hit of the land. For you, the living, the mash was meant too. When you get to my door, tell them Roberto Buscarsi sent you. And then you can do the
mash.
The monster mash.
The mash.
It was a graveyard smash. It was all in a flash. He did the monster man. This group is so much fun to play with. Can I do the goodnight song? Do we have time? Okay.
WGDR Plainfield and WGDH Hardwick.
It's a Hoagy Carmichael song I love to end nights with. Don't cry. It's so sweet you'll cry. Here we are. All the guests have left. Holding hands and yawning. Look how late it gets. Two sleepy people by dawn's early light. Too much in love to say goodnight. Here we are, in our cozy chair, gnawing on a wishbone from Carl's Frigidaire. Two sleepy people with not much to say, too much in love to break away. Now do you remember the nights we used to linger in the hall? Your father, he didn't like me at all. I called him Pops. Do you remember the reason why we married in the fall? To rent this little nest and get a piece of rest. Here we are, just about the same. Foggy little fella and drowsy little dame. Two sleepy people by dawn's early light. Too much in love to say goodnight. Goodnight.
Roberto Buscarsi, thank you.
Thank you, Vermont.
And Bucky Bacaw, and members of the Montpelier Ukulele Players. Yeah. I'm Carl Ettenayer, and that brings us to the end of this special broadcast on The Daily Show. And now we return you to Sylvie Daly and our regular programming.